We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 254. The Yankees took 3 out of 4 from the Royals. It had to be done. We were all hoping for that sweep. But Scott, a wise man once told me, his name is John Sterling. He said, you know, you can't sweep doubleheaders.
No, that's true. You can't sweep doubleheaders. But you can't lose two to the Kansas City Royals either. I thought everybody in the Twitterverse, on Facebook, on every social media was going to lose their ever-loving mind on after the first game on Saturday.
That was bad. That was very ugly.
It was like the entire world had ended, and the Yankees had a literal zero chance to do anything for the rest of the season, and we were immediately going to go to football season. Like, baseball season was done. That was it. The Red Sox won the World Series, and that was what happened after Severino.
What's up with Giants and Jets training camp after that, right?
Yeah. And then the narrative shifts a little bit, because look what happens. They go out and they do win the second game and a nice little comeback. And then they take 3 of 4. So now we're looking back and they took 3 of 4. Not the end of the world.
Right. But but just isolate, we're going to get into everything. But when the reason Yankees fans were hitting the panic button on Saturday afternoon is because there was Severino's fourth bad game in a row, and he just got pounded by the worst offense in baseball.
It's concerning.
Red flag city right there.
Yeah, no, 1,000%. I'm concerned about Severino, officially concerned. I don't know what the concern is, because he seems healthy. He's able to dial it up. But it's just like he's missing. It's like he's in a slump. I don't know how else to describe
Pitchers
it.
Pitchers do go in slumps, just absolutely. Like hitters can go in slumps.
You can lose your mechanics. And I think that's what's happening. I think he's lost his mechanics. And I think that was pretty telling, actually, when we saw, there was a runner on base and Larry Rothschild came out. I want to say it was like the fourth inning, and it was a very, it was not a mound visit that you normally see. And you could just tell that there was visible frustration, because he let up a base hit, or it was a hard hit ball to right field, I think it was. And Rothschild identified that, saw that, and went out there and was talking to him about something. So I think he's getting frustrated, and, you know, with that, possible mechanics are failing him a little bit. So I think he'll be fine. I think he'll get back into it, but absolutely it's concerning.
It's alarming because for the first 20 starts of the season or whatever it was, he was unhittable.
Right.
He peaked and he had a sub 2 ERA. That is the definition of unhittable. And then to have 4 really bad starts in a row, the last 2 coming against subpar offenses, I understand the concern. He's got to fix it. He's got to fix it. Because like we said last week, if Severino is not the ace that we saw for all of last season and then the first half of this season, doesn't matter what the rest of this rotation does, that makes things next to impossible for the Yankees to go deep in the playoffs.
No, there's no doubt. He's gonna bounce back. He's going to be just fine.
So you're taking the rosy glasses approach on this one?
Yeah, absolutely. I have to.
You have to, for your own sanity, I think.
It's the only way to go. Unless you're going to just live in a world of conspiracies and misery, then, you know, you gotta have the faith that he's going to come back.
Come into my lair.
I was going to say, unless I want to live your life, I have to do this.
Well, welcome to my dojo, Scott. All right, so we've got a couple of things, just housekeeping notes before we get into all of it. The August 18th event is coming up pretty quickly. We're almost in the month of August now. That is the 1998 Celebration Day. That game is against the Blue Jays. That is a Saturday afternoon game. It's going to be a lot of fun because they're doing the whole reunion type of thing. We were there for the 96 game, and what they did was they called out everybody who was on the team. They were all in their positions. It was Kay and Sterling on the field, right? Doing a nice little speech and a little montage to the whole
World
Series run.
Yeah, they were the ones, they kind of emceed the event and brought everybody out. And it was, you said this last time, and it's pretty appropriate, minus the actual game. It's kind of another old timers day, just so they can come out and celebrate the guys again. So it's fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and hopefully that the Yankees will be just beaten up on the Blue Jays. So get those tickets, as well as the September 15th tickets, which are also on sale now.
Yeah, I'm again. This one's going to be fun. The 96. These are my teams. Like 96 through 98. Like the late 90s were my guys. So I'm looking forward to this again to see all the guys back in, and hopefully we can have another W for the boys who are in town. Okay, guys, before we get into it, I want to tell you a little bit more about our good friends at SeatGeek. Whether you're headed to the Yankees game or a concert this summer, or you actually are anxiously awaiting football season and you're planning out your tickets, SeatGeek has you covered. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for last-minute deals, planning a night out, you need to find that perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action at absolutely great value. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever by searching multiple ticket sites and grading every ticket based on value. SeatGeek helps you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. I do have the SeatGeek app on my phone. I use it constantly. Whenever I'm looking for a ticket for a last-minute Yankee game, I do go to SeatGeek. Buy my ticket. Best of all, listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. So listeners of the Bronx Pinstripes show just need to download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code Bronx today. That's promo code Bronx for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
All right. So, like we said, Yanks take 3 out of 4 from Kansas City. We were hoping for the sweep. Maybe if it wasn't an actual doubleheader. I understand the cliche goes, I was saying it sarcastically. I understand. It's hard to sweep doubleheaders, even against a team that came into Yankee Stadium sporting the worst offense and the worst pitching staff.
You know, it's funny because Michael Kay tried to debunk that myth, by the way, and kind of did a good job. It's the stats actually show that it's not that difficult to sweep a doubleheader. I think
well,
we all
I
think
feel
in our
like
head.
Trash.
It was pretty close to 500. It was like, you know, 50% of the time that is swept, 50% of the time it's not swept. I don't remember.
Well,
the
Yankees have split every doubleheader this year, and they've played them all against bad teams. Baltimore, Kansas City, there was a doubleheader in Detroit. Like, those are all lousy teams going nowhere. They're all bottom feeders.
Oh, so this stat carries, from what I remember, again, this is just me thinking about it right now. I could be wrong, but there was a larger period of time. It wasn't obviously this year. And what have you done for me lately? And they've been splitting a lot of doubleheaders to bad teams. So it feels like that. And this year it has been difficult for them. So it rings true for sure in 2018.
And when you look back, it's like what we've seen since the All-Star break, it just seems like they're struggling in a lot of different facets of the game that were something you could count on in the first half. Yes, we knew that the rotation after Severino was in trouble, but at least every fifth day you could count on Severino. Well, recently, we haven't been able to count on Severino. And then the offense, yeah, they do struggle with runners in scoring position, but they're still going to pound a lot of home runs and just wear pitchers down. But they haven't been hitting a ton of home runs since the All-Star break, and they're leaving so many freaking guys on base, they cannot get the big hit. I saw this stat thrown around on Twitter. Last 13 plate appearances for the Yankees with the bases loaded, they don't have a hit. They have a couple RBI groundouts, a couple sac flies. We know they lead the league in sac flies. The mystical sac fly, the underrated sac fly. We all love a good sac fly. But how about a bases clearing double every now and again?
It's true. With a lineup like this, not only do you want that to happen, but you pretty much expect it to happen, you know, more times than obviously what's happening with the last 13 plate appearances when you're seeing that without a hit. That's absolutely a concern. I mean, you gotta clean that up. You gotta make sure that guys are coming out and you know, hitting the ball a little bit better and getting some better at bats. They are driving in the run still, and the thing is that, you know, they're not blowing teams out, they're not putting teams away, but they're still scoring runs. I mean, they're down Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez, two of the biggest bats going into the lineup that they were expecting. Aaron Judge has been that guy, Gary Sanchez not as much, but I mean, they're down a lot of firepower right now, and from just having those guys not on the field and not in the lineup takes away from the other big guys too, theoretically, from Stanton and Bird, because, you know, the protection's not as there. But we are starting to see Bird. I mean, we've seen Bird ever since, the last couple weeks before the All-Star break, really start to turn it up. He's hitting the ball a lot better. And then our boy, Neil Walker, don't call me Chris Carter ever again, get your word out of my mouth.
He must have listened to that show and just got pissed off.
I mean, he's hitting the ball. He's the guy that we all thought, you know, we were getting when he's coming over. So, and maybe that's because he's getting a lot more plate appearances, more consistent plate appearances, because he's playing kind of all over the place. And he's been a very, very big part of what this team has, you know, done recently as far as the games that they've won. So, got to give credit to Neil Walker for turning this around and starting to hit the ball. So he's an asset when he's the Neil Walker we thought he is. That guy can hit, and he's an asset
and a tremendously useful bench player to be able to play three infield positions and hit from both sides of the plate. Yeah, 933 OPS in his last 60 plate appearances.
Right. So yeah, we're going to completely destroy you if you're on this team not doing a damn thing. But when you start living up to your expectations, again, expectations are a funny thing. If you have them in your head and someone's not meeting them, then it looks 20 times worse. So if you walk in with zero expectations and they're like mediocre, you're like, eh. But now he's starting to live up to that guy. I mean, like I always had him in my head. I don't know what his lifetime stats are, but I always had him in my head as like a 270, 280 hitter. Like that's the guy I thought we were getting. A lot of contact, you know, maybe some doubles, a home run here and there, but a guy that can put together a good at bat and will make good contact. And I think that's what we're seeing.
You touched on it with the Judge and Sanchez injuries. The beauty of this lineup in the first half when they were rattling off all those wins is that 1 through 9, they were dangerous. And now you look at over the weekend, and those, especially in those double headers, we have a mailbag question, which we'll talk about specifically Boone's decisions to play and sit players. But game one of that double header had 6, 7, 8, 9, Romine, Tyler Wade, Neil Walker, Sugar Shane Robinson. It's
who
like
went deep.
I know, but that is a far, far cry from earlier in the season where we had guys like Hicks and Duhar and Gleyber Torres all batting down there. I mean, that's some serious firepower at the bottom. Now, the pitcher gets through the first 5, 6 guys in the order, he can kind of take a little bit of a mental breather. It's even when the guys aren't all hitting, if the pitcher is always having to grind through at bats, that is how this team is going to wear the pitchers down. I remember we talked about this earlier in the season, that the Yankees do their most damage in the fifth inning, because that's when the starting pitcher is just totally drained out of mentally and physically, and then that 1 through 9 Yankees order can just start going to work, and they're not doing that right now.
Right. I mean, that's what happens. The nice thing, though, is when you look up and down, like you still see damage everywhere. I mean, maybe not the last two guys. If you're looking at the starting team right now, you're missing a couple. Well, with Neil Walker hitting too, you could still fill out a pretty damn good lineup card. I mean, it should be absolutely plenty. Romine and Sanchez is probably the biggest difference. Sanchez, you know, hitting like we thought he would hit. If you're looking,
can
at
we also just hold on one second? We got to also talk about Sanchez too. I mean, yes, he's hitting under 200. That is an eyesore. But as bad a season as he was having, he was still leading catchers in the first half for home runs and RBIs.
Yeah, I know, but the last like 3 to 4 weeks of him,
he was awful. He was a black hole.
It wasn't there. Yeah,
but I think a lot of that
damage was done before that.
But I think people, there needs to be an expectation set with catchers and how far and away Sanchez is above every other catcher offensively in baseball. And the Royals have a really good catcher in Sal Perez and a really good offensive catcher. He murdered them all weekend. But there's like 2 or 3 guys in baseball who can provide that kind of damage from the catcher spot.
Sal Perez is hitting like 230 also. So.
Okay, well, he hit like 500 this weekend.
I know, but my point is that like that's one of the guys you reference as one of the better hitting catchers, and that guy's hitting 230. So
right, but so when Gary Sanchez is hitting like Gary Sanchez, it's an unbelievable advantage over 29 other teams in baseball.
Look, man, Gary Sanchez put those unrealistic expectations in every one of our head when he came out and was
not
on
unrealistic.
Fire. No, no,
he's,
no. When he was on fire for that second half that he came up and he was like tying Babe Ruth records and shit. Like that guy, everybody's like, oh my God, this guy is a catcher. He's the second coming. He can do these things. So now everybody just expects him to do it at all times. I still think he's a good hitter. I think he's in a bad place right now as far as, you know, mental approach at the plate and mechanics. I just think he's in a bad place and slumping. I still have confidence in Gary Sanchez as a hitter. Take away the catcher spot. Like, I think he's a good hitter, period.
He is. But you say unreal expectations. Last season, he hit 33 home runs and 20 doubles, and he missed the month of April. So if he just has an average month of April, we're talking about like 38 home runs out of the catcher.
Didn't he hit 20 in like 20 days?
He did, but
that's what I'm talking about.
I'm not, but he did back up his rookie season last year.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying he didn't. There's a clear difference between what happened last year and what happened this year. I mean, there's something going on, whether it's in his head or mechanically, and that he's just not able to figure out, or maybe he really has been hurt for a while. But either way.
Are we going down another Gary Sanchez rabbit hole?
No, I'm trying not to, actually. I'm really
we got some feedback on that, and people love the rabbit hole discussion.
My God.
I think you and I could do a 15-hour podcast on Gary Sanchez and that whole Hustlegate.
It's one of those fascinating topics to me when you're looking at a guy like that with that much talent that just can't put it together for periods of time. It's just so strange.
All right, well, so professional segue right here. Severino, all that talent, has not been able to put it together for four straight starts. Listen to these ugly-ass stats. The last four games, 19 in a third innings pitch, 19 earned runs, 7 home runs allowed.
Mm. Yeah, the 7 home runs allowed is one of the big numbers that I'm circling because, you know, that just means he's making bad mistakes and leaving the ball over the plate, and guys are pounding it, and they're like ready to make solid contact and hit home runs. So There's something going on here, and I don't know if it goes back to, we really haven't heard much about this since the Boston game where they said that he was possibly tipping his pitches, and then we kind of saw him, was the first of the four starts at Cleveland, when we saw him.
No, Toronto.
It was, so that was the second.
So Toronto, he pitched okay. He pitched 5 innings. I think he gave up 3 or 4
runs. The Cleveland
game
was the second one, right?
Cleveland, he gave up more hard hit balls in that Cleveland game than he'd given up all season.
So, you know, maybe there's something going on. Maybe there is something happening with his mechanics where he's tipping something off. They should absolutely identify it if that were the case.
If he was tipping pitches, and I know Kay and Cohn were talking about this in the second game last night, but if he's tipping pitches, that should take one start before somebody in that Yankees clubhouse, some nerd behind there watching game footage, should be able to figure that out, right?
Well, I tell you, I remember when I talked about this at the top of the show was when Larry Rothschild came out. I think it was the fourth inning. It was the fourth or fifth inning when he came out. And it was a very strange mound visit. And you could tell he saw something. He saw either visible frustration, which he was visibly frustrated because the ball was getting hit hard. And he came out and said something. And it was a long visit. So the conversation that Larry Rothschild had at that moment, that's what I want to know what that conversation was, because obviously he saw something, and whether it was just to calm his guy down, be like, you know, you can work out of it, and he did. And I loved the mound visit because obviously to me, I don't care the number of visits like during the regular season, like throw that out the window. If you see something, you go out there every time, like whatever, you go out there.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't run out of mound visits yet.
Has anybody? Yeah, I haven't even really heard much
about it. Kansas City got down to 0 last night.
Well, there you go, Kansas City. But so if you see something, he saw something and went out there and identified it and brought it up. That he didn't wait for the inning to end. He didn't wait for him to get in more trouble. He went out there and did it. So I don't know what it is. I personally think it's just like, you know, a bad slump, and he's losing his mechanics a little bit. I think that's one of the bigger things. And he's just not making the same pitches. The fastball command isn't what it was in the first half.
And I think even worse than the fastball command has been the slider command.
Yeah.
Because you throw a spinning slider in the middle of the plate, that's a BP fastball.
Right. And well, and I think, you know, when frustration starts kicking in and you start losing your mechanics, like that's the pitch that's going to be hit out of the ballpark because you're not going to execute it as well. And if you don't execute a fastball as well, you'll probably miss the zone. You're still going to hit it, you know, 97 miles per hour. But if you don't execute on a slider, you're spinning that thing over the plate, and that's a problem.
How about this theory? I think you're going to like this one. So Luis Severino kind of started to struggle around the time Gary Sanchez went on the DL.
Oh, so you think it's a personal catcher situation?
Hey, maybe he loves throwing to the starting catcher of the New York Yankees, Gary Sanchez, and people just assume that Sanchez cannot receive. He can't do anything right behind the plate, except Severino has been one of the best pitchers in baseball with him catching him. And also, Sabathia has credited Sanchez for having a great working relationship with Sabathia, and he's given him credit for how well he's pitched over the last two seasons.
Yep, yep. So what happened when Gary Sanchez was walking after that ball and then
that was a cross. Oh, okay. See, and then what happened was
fighting the dugout. It looked like a great relationship that was happening right there. I truly think that he's just in a slump. I really do, because
you think,
and I think that his mechanics, I think it boils down to his mechanics and just not executing the pitches. That
could be
I think
a little bit of like mid-season fatigue, maybe a little dead arm scenario or something like that.
I don't think we're seeing a dead arm. Yeah.
Well, the velocity was there the last two starts, 97, 98, 99 miles an hour. But what if the pitches don't have the same type of movement on it? Because he's not getting the same amount of swings
and
misses.
That's mechanics.
A lot of foul balls, a lot of deep counts where he was breezing through 7-8 innings at 100 pitches early in the season. Now you're seeing his pitch count at 105 in the fifth inning. This is Nathan Eovaldi on the mound.
Okay,
circa 2015.
Nathan Eovaldi just went 7.
I said circa
pitches.
2015. Apparently the 2018 Nathan Eovaldi, he's like the Monstars. He went and stole everyone's talent in the league.
Well, he was pretty damn good as last year with the Yankees too, before he got hurt, if you recall. But the problem here, and another thing, when we're talking about general fatigue with pitchers, especially power pitchers, if you start getting fatigue in the lower half as well, you can start seeing a lot of mechanics falling off. And I think that's what we're seeing. When I see a 97 mile an hour fastball and a 98 mile an hour fastball and a 99 mile an hour fastball, I'm not seeing a dead arm. What I'm seeing is a guy that still has the live arm, that's not executing his pitches, is not hitting his spots, is leaving the ball over the plate more often, and is just not executing the pitches to the point that he was before. So fatigue can happen all over. Arm fatigue can lead to leg fatigue. You know, core fatigue can lead to bad mechanics. There's a number of things that can lead to these things. They rested him a much longer period of time. So, you know, maybe they knew something. Maybe they knew there was a bit of fatigue going on in his body. It absolutely could be the case. I just don't see like an arm issue at this point. So I do think it's mechanical, and whether that's his body saying, you know, I'm not able to duplicate the same motion every single time like he was before, and he's losing that muscle memory, that's a possibility.
His next start is going to be Thursday against Boston in Fenway, which is the first game of that 4-game series. And, you know, I don't want to over-exaggerate or anything, but this might be the biggest start of this season so far for him, because that's going to set the tone for the rest of the series. If Severino comes out there and gets crushed in 5 innings, that's going to be tough to recover from in that 4-game series. On the flip side, if he goes out there and looks like Luis Severino in April, May, and June, then the Yankees they've got a lot of momentum behind them, and they could win that series.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that start, because I think it's one. Not only are we all, you know, holding our breath to make sure he can come back, but it seems like a kind of a perfect scenario for him. He loves the big moment. He's talked about that. He wants the ball in the big moment. And somebody who's like potentially thinking too much, or you know, has a slump in their mechanics or whatnot, to me, like a big game like this with all the adrenaline going on the road, kind of gets rid of all that crap, and you just go out there and you compete at a high level. And I like that. I like that. So I think
Tampa
could be a very big bounce back. Yeah. How are you
Tampa? Who cares about Tampa?
Right.
Kansas City. You want me to pitch against Kansas City?
Yeah. How am I supposed to get up for that one?
You're talking about practice, bro. You're talking about practice.
So that's what I think. Like, I think that's like, it's a perfect scenario in this sense where, you know, everything is at that point, like, you just got to lay it on the line, and there's going to be a ton of adrenaline going. And I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Obviously, we really hope that he's just in a slump and is back to Luis Severino, and it needs to happen fast.
I'm a little scared.
<He'll be all right. laughs>
A little bit scared. Sabathia, he also couldn't get through the fifth inning. So doubleheader, neither starter could get through the fifth inning. It's a real problem, and it makes what Jay Happ went and pitched 6 innings today look like a miracle.
Yeah, no, it's not good when your guys are can't even get out of the fifth inning at all, and they're throwing up spots lines with a 4 in them. Not good stuff at all. CC definitely looked like he was laboring a little bit. It's one of those. You could tell that Boone said, we need to win this game. We got to win this game. And I think he kind of treated it like that to bring, and he brought Holder in to get out of a spot.
I agree. I think that like getting swept at home to the Royals in a doubleheader made that second game a must win. I mean, it's really difficult to use must win in the regular season, because the definition of a must win is if you lose, then your season's over. And obviously that wasn't the case, but there are certain other games that fall into the, man, it would really be shitty if we lose this game. And I think that's what Saturday night was.
Another thing with Sabathia's start that didn't really get much play, and I think it was 100% intentional was in the first inning, there was a second and third situation. And Lucas Duda, I believe, was the batter. And Sabathia plunked him on the inside, hit him in the ribs. It was like practically square in the right in the ribs, like the exact place you'd hit a guy. And I think it was intentional. I think it was a way for him to say, nobody's hit anybody yet. Judge is, you guys have been hitting a bunch of our dudes. Judge just got hurt. I got to hit you. CeCe's that guy that I think in that situation, first inning, second and third, there's a base open. What's the problem? He doesn't care if the bases are loaded. And I think he drilled Duda on purpose.
Even though it's a lefty-lefty situation where that's a good matchup for Sabathia, that's a good situation where he can get out of that inning with no damage, you really think he's going to load the bases?
1,000%. I think he's had no problems.
I think the base was open,
and he saw their big first baseman standing there, probably one of the better hitters on their team at this point, and he drilled them.
Well, especially if they traded away Moustakas, their actual best hitter.
Yeah, yeah. Him and I don't know. Is Gordon on that list? I don't know.
I know Sabathia is the pitching staff leader. He's the dad of the clubhouse, so he can take that in his own hands and do that. But do we really want Sabathia and his 88-mile-an-hour fastball drilling guys, or do we want Severino and his 98-mile-an-hour fastball drilling guys?
Well, Severino didn't, so Sabathia had to do it. That's what I'm saying. It took that long, and nobody did it. And Sabathia's like, these guys haven't been hit yet. I have an opportunity. I have a base open. I'm going to get out of this inning. I'm going to drill this guy. And he did. He hit him right in the ribs. It was where he wanted it. I love it. And a lot of people didn't think it was intentional. I 1,000% think it was intentional. When that base was open, 100% he's doing it.
Interesting. Yeah. And it would obviously be retaliation for the Judge injury, which he's going to be out 3 weeks. So this is weird because they're saying it's a chip fracture on the right wrist. No surgery is needed. Yankees.
You're not gonna say the bone. Everybody wants to know what the bone's called.
It's the ulnar styloid bone.
Wow, you did it much better than I was expecting.
I practiced 3 weeks before he can swing a bat in a game situation. And I forget who tweeted it out, but I saw there was a quote. He might take dry swings before that.
Yeah, that's you gotta love the dry swings. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's not a game. It's not a not a wet swing. It's a dry swing. Dry swings are good. Not as much stress, you know. So the initial report was 3 weeks, and that's when we thought he was going to start coming back. But then, when Francesa was on, Susan sent him a text and said, "Hey, John, I just got to tell you, it's 3 weeks, and you might be able to swing a bat in a game." And it was beautiful. Francesa dropped it live on air. It was from a beautiful assist from Susan to Mike. I loved it.
So that'd be great. If he's back in 3 weeks, spectacular, because he has been one of the most consistent. We called him the first half MVP. So we need him back as soon as possible. But I'm concerned with the fact that wrist injury can really be a prolonged thing where Judge might not be the same guy after this for the rest of the season. I think about Mark Teixeira and his wrist injury. He wasn't the same guy for another year because his power wasn't there. Even if the wrist is good enough to play in a game, it might not be good enough to be the same Aaron Judge.
I'm not concerned about that. I can't compare two different bodies and it's not even the same injury, right? It's an injury. First of all, Judge doesn't even, he says it's sore. It's like when they call it a fracture, it's like a chip fracture. It's almost like a deep contusion that they call a fracture. If they see anything, they can call it a fracture. But I don't know. From what the way Judge was talking about it, it didn't really seem overly concerned. It seems like this is more of a precautionary, especially when I saw that he's going to be swinging like a live bat in 3 weeks. Like, that's a short amount of time if you really did something horrible to your wrist. So I think this is more precautionary. There's no way we could possibly compare Aaron Judge and his body in his mid-20s to Mark Teixeira when he was in his mid-30s coming up and who is made of glass.
Like, I'm not comparing them. I'm just saying wrist injuries are concerning.
Yeah, well, I mean, if that's the comparison, then yes, we're all a broken people because we've seen what wrist injuries can do to big first basemen and big players who hit in the middle of the order on the Yankees. They're very different players, though.
I agree with that, and I think it could have been a lot worse. I'm actually surprised they left him in to get that second at bat. I know he was DHing that day, but when I saw it in his reaction to after getting hit, he was clearly in pain, clearly frustrated. He was flexing the hand, trying to flex the wrist out. I don't know why they left him in for that second at bat. That only seemed like, especially how safe they always play it and how safe Boone plays it. I'm really surprised at that.
I am too, to a degree, but I think at some point they're making sure with the doctor's coming over and touching all over there, you know, and making sure that there's no point that's making him, you know, in more pain. I think they just thought it was a bruise. And honestly, like, again, when we're looking at what the actual diagnosis was, a chip fracture on the right, and he's going to be back in 3 weeks, it seems like it's damn close to a bruise. It seems like a deep contusion, and maybe there was some hairline fracture or whatever, but, I don't know. I'm not overly concerned about this right now. If we start seeing him struggle when he comes back, then I think that's something that we could probably look back and say maybe it's the fracture is deeper than we thought or whatnot. But from what they're saying and what the timetable says, I'm not overly concerned.
Well, the thing I'm concerned with is, like I said, the Judge's wrist health for the rest of the year, but also this team has been struggling to get momentum for a month. They make the two big trade deadline acquisitions. They get Hap, they get Britton. That really helps their team in two different ways. And immediately they lose their guy, Aaron Judge. Yeah. So it's like you take two steps forward and then you take a gigantic step back all in one day. It's just tough. It's really tough what happened.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate too, because it seems like every time they have an injury like this, Clint Frazier is down when it would be his moment to come up and play every day pretty much or play a ton during a given week with a guy like Aaron Judge out, you know, whether it's at the DH spot or in right field, he can play right field. It's just really unfortunate because now he's back with the concussion symptoms. You know, we talked about that over the last episode. It's just bad timing for him. It seems like each time he's had that opportunity, he's not been available. So it's truly unfortunate for this team and for Clint.
The quote that Clint had about it, it really makes you sympathize with him because, I mean, this seems like a lost season for him, the way he's talking. And it's not like a wrist injury or a hamstring injury or anything like that where there's a set timetable. You rehab, you come back, it's fine. Head injuries, it's such an unknown. And I think that's what's bothering him the most is that how do you really know when your brain is healthy again?
Yeah, you don't, because and the thing is, they can come back, as we're seeing, like any slight jog.
And he said that it wasn't even a play back. That he thought was like, oh, I just messed my brain up again. He just dove for a ball.
Well, that wasn't even the one. Apparently it was it had also reoccurred when he was in New York, and on a play where he slid into third. I think I don't remember the exact play, but I was talking about it. I was talking about it last week when we were talking, with the Scranton Rail Riders. It was basically saying that that's when it initially happened. And then on the jog, when he dove for it, you know, he felt it even more. So yeah. I think he did feel it before that. It's just one of those things that can continue to come back. I mean, it's the same thing, you know, with former Yankee Brandon Drury.
I also liked that, as if it even needed to be stated, Ellsbury is not an option.
Not an option. It's all fake news that he's.
Do you think though the Yankees are exploring options to add another outfield bat?
I don't think anybody major. If they are, I think it would be a depth move, but I don't think it's a.
Somebody better than Shane Robinson.
Yeah, I mean Shane Robinson hit a home run yesterday, so that's
somebody better than Shane Robinson.
big time sugar Shane Robinson right there. Big right hook. I don't think so. You know why? Because they just traded away two guys that are, you know, those types of players that can come in and fill in well. Right. It's kind of crazy how that whole thing went down, because if that deal hadn't gone down before the Judge injury and Drury and McKinney are still here, Billy McKinney might be the guy coming up.
Yep.
And I don't know if that probably trade would. Gets done.
Yeah. Well,
maybe it
would have
been a different player, or maybe it could have been a bigger prospect. I don't know.
Yeah, I think Drury would still be in the package, but I think Cashman would have tried to push somebody other than McKinney.
Right. Yeah, so it's very interesting, because right in that move, when you needed the depth, in the AAA, the guy that you most likely would have brought up for an outfield replacement is no longer on the team.
Well, I mean, think about spring training. What was our position that we'd never had to worry about? Outfield. We had 1,000 outfielders.
Yeah.
And in this season, we've seen so many guys go down. It happened in the first week of April, and it's happening again now, where they're actually thin at outfield depth.
Yeah, so. It's crazy. And that and it's because of, you know, if Frazier were healthy, then we probably wouldn't be talking about that as much.
No, definitely wouldn't. So you mentioned it, the Hap trade that happened after we last recorded. Toronto gets Brandon Drury and Billy McKinney. I think this is an example of a trade that is really perfect for both sides. The Yankees get Hap, who is a stabilizer. I said today, as I was watching him pitch, I was bored. And I say that in the best way possible. Yeah. Nothing flashy, nothing overly dramatic. He just goes out there and gets people out and gives the Yankees something that they can count on. And that's something they haven't had all season. So good. He's not going to be an ace, but he's going to go out there and give you a competitive game. That's good stuff. And then Toronto gets two guys they're going to plug in. And Drury, I think, we all think, is going to be a major league player. So I think good trade for both sides.
I mean, Drury's probably their potential, their long-term third baseman once Josh Donaldson.
Well, they still have Vlad Guerrero Jr.
That's true. Drury's going to have a spot on this team. There's no doubt about it.
They told him you're playing every day for the rest of the season. We're going to move you around. You're going to get some infield spots, but you're in there every day.
And McKinney is a guy who is damn near ready, and who knows what he could do if with some regular playing time. When the trade first came over. When you're looking at all the pitchers that the Yankees could have gotten, right, and we're talking about all these free agents, and the list was completely underwhelming.
We got it. So can we mock him? Can we still mock him?
I don't know. He's probably our best pitcher right now.
So here's the thing.
I feel like we can't. I can't mock him. I forgot about something. I cannot mock him.
Uh-oh.
I'm actually, yeah, I have a – so he actually does some work for a nonprofit that has to do with children's heart defects that I have a tie with. So I can't.
You definitely can. Now me by association, I feel guilty if I mock him.
I know. I totally forgot about that. And he actually was a really nice guy and went and did like a whole foundation thing in Chicago for this organization that we worked with closely in Boston. So there's a very close connection there.
So J-Hap.
Yeah, J-Hap, yep. Mr. Hap.
Mr. J-Hap.
When we're looking at the pitchers that are completely, and I will not let this go into the way I think about him as a baseball player, just his first name. But when we're looking at the players, you know, we all knew it was underwhelming. It was just every one of them, it seemed like, had been struggling up until the trades when Hamels went to Chicago and J-Hap came here. But when you're looking at those guys and you see their careers, he is that kind of guy. He's that boring guy who goes out there. He's going to throw, six innings and he's going to keep you in the game. And it seems like he's done that his whole career. And in fact, he's been a Yankee killer in the past. And the fact that I think that put him over the top for J-Hap was his record against the Red Sox. I mean, clear as day, he's got a good record against the Red Sox. And I think that was enticing for Cashman.
It definitely was. And I think this was a perfect situation to get him a first start against Kansas City, one of the worst teams in baseball. It's a tune-up for next weekend against Boston, but you know how fans react. Next weekend's going to be Hap versus Eovaldi. Like, if Eovaldi goes out there and deals and Hap struggles at Fenway Park, brace yourself for a meltdown.
I mean, I'm not totally surprised because I think Eovaldi's a pretty good pitcher, but the Hap signing, while in the beginning I was like, eh, that's a lot to give up. At the same time, I'm looking at these guys. I'm like, yeah, they're probably both expendable. Damn ready to be in the major leagues and you know, do whatever they're going to do in their career. But yeah, they're expendable at this point. And McKinney, where is he ever going to play besides now because of all these injuries?
right field tomorrow.
But when you look at the depth and they're all blocked. And with Neil Walker hitting now, it makes Drury completely expendable.
Yeah, and as far as Drury's concerned at third base, I think Andujar just Wally Pipped him. He came in and he took the job. Andujar has hit enough to where the Yankees could not take him out of the lineup. It would have been too much of a backlash, no matter what Brandon Drury was doing in the minors, no matter how many All-Star games he was nominated to. You couldn't take Andujar out of the lineup when he's hitting 30 doubles. Leading rookies in doubles, tops in the leagues in doubles. Like, sorry, we got a guy who's producing.
No, I mean, and he's a guy who's been in the organization forever, and he's the guy that everybody wanted. I mean, everybody as a Yankee fan wanted Andujar to win that job. He didn't win the job out of spring. Drury, obviously with the sight vision issues, Andujar took it, and you know, good for him. I think that was it's a good thing for the organization because I think he is a better player.
Drury on his way out said, obviously, this is not what I expected when I was traded to the Yankees. Because do you remember us talking about how excited Drury was to come to the Yankees? And he had all those quotes about how he always wanted to be a Yankee and he was so excited about this trade. And we were excited about the trade as well. And it's just so many things went wrong. And then he also said, I don't know if this was ironic or not. He said, I see the ball well at Rogers Center.
It's just a crazy amount of circumstances in one player for one season and what happened to him. Because, yeah, I mean, it seemed like a great scenario for him. He was getting traded to the New York Yankees basically to be the third baseman and potentially the long-term third baseman of the New York Yankees. And, I mean, that's a dream, right? And you're looking at what happened and the unfortunate amount of circumstances that happened to the kid after coming out and winning the job out of spring training. It's just kind of crazy. You really wouldn't think that would ever happen to one player in that short amount of time. At the end of the day, like if you're looking at silver lining, if you're Brandon Drury, you're going to be playing every day in Toronto as a Major League Baseball player, and that's it. And that's what you need to do. So he's going to have a really good opportunity.
How much do you think the extra year of service time factored into this trade?
No, it's interesting. I haven't thought about that. That's probably, I mean, I still think it was a lot to give up in the first place. So, you know, I don't know how much it really went into it because it's.
But if
like
you're
it
Toronto, you're saying, well, we're basically. I mean, it's what the Yankees traded for last year. The Yankees thought they only had 2 years locked up of Drury, but now the Blue Jays have 2 years locked up of Drury.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it better for the Blue Jays. I mean, I still think it, without that, it's a good trade for the Blue Jays.
So. But maybe the Yankees didn't have to give up Drury, McKinney plus another long shot prospect. You never know.
I guess it seemed like a pretty big bounty as it is right now.
One more thought on Hap. So he took number 34. That was AJ Burnett's number. AJ
to JA. Ooh. So does that mean he's going to be the opposite? He is kind of the opposite. Honestly, his style.
The exact opposite of AJ Burnett.
Yeah, we can actually count on him. Nice and calm. AJ Burnett was a wild man.
J-Hap is just vanilla. He goes out there, he's solid, you know what you're getting. AJ Burnett goes out there, he might pitch a no-hitter, he might not get out of the first inning.
He might rip his jersey off and start flipping off Jack McDowell style, might flip it off the crowd. But, you know, it's when we saw what J-Hap did today, it was... Like it was boring, but it was, you know what? I loved it.
It was boring in the best sense.
I loved it because it did. It brought you a calmness.
Yes.
To the mound, a calmness to the team. We're like, okay, this is a professional. This guy is a pro. And he seems like a really, I don't know. He just kind of, the way I view him, he just seems like an overachiever type guy. Didn't he go to Northwestern? I think he did. I thought I saw that somewhere. He looks like a smart guy. He just looks smart. He just looks like one of those guys who would be a good pitcher and who would be someone who can be dependable. He just comes across as a dependable guy.
Yeah, and he's no stranger to getting traded. Fourth time he's been traded at the deadline.
Yeah, well, that's a lot.
It's a lot. Sonny Gray, let's kick it back to Thursday. We kind of glossed over Sonny Gray's game. He pitched okay. It was a solid start against a weak team at home, so that's always good. We know how he does not do well at Yankee Stadium. He pitched five innings. I think if he didn't take that ground ball off the hand, Boone probably sends him back out there.
Yeah, I think they were trying to be, again, just precautious to make sure cautious to make sure that he didn't...
I like precautious.
...affect it. But, you know, I don't... When pitchers do that, you look at it, it's like, it's so stupid, don't do that. But instinctually, it's so difficult to not do that.
Yeah,
to not stick your hand out there and try to grab a ball. I mean, like, I understand. But yeah, he looked like he was in control of the game. I mean, he was he didn't give up any runs, three hits. He was, he struck out five guys. So you'd like to see him get rid of those two walks. Like, the walks are still concerning for me. For him, because that just means he's, you know, not around the strike zone and not working ahead of guys. And when you see two walks in five innings, like, that's too much. But yeah, you know, again, we're looking for progression, and I think that's what we're getting. We're getting progress from Sonny Gray, and I mean, he's been pretty good. So,
it couldn't work out better for him in the second half as far as lining up. I mean, he comes out, pitches against the Mets, they're a weak team, then goes against the Royals, worst offensive baseball, and is now going to face Baltimore, who just traded away Manny Machado. So I know the Orioles just pounded the Tampa pitching staff.
They put up a ton of runs.
They scored like 37 runs in the last three games against the Tampa pitching staff that shut the Yankees down, but still, Baltimore sucks. So it's lined up where he can just gain some confidence.
Yeah, and you know, I think the next step is just to see him have that confidence and to get a little deeper into games. And again, I think once we start seeing those walks get cut back down, you know, we'll see more efficient innings and lower pitch counts and him able to get deeper in the games. Because it's, you know, we're starting to see this bullpen. I feel like we're seeing the bullpen get tired with our, like, as, like, now.
Chad Green and David Robertson.
Green and Chad Green look like they're struggling for sure. Yep. And I don't know if that's because of overwork. This, you know, how much work they've gotten in the first half. Because we just haven't had guys go deep besides Luis Severino.
Yeah, you look at just the amount of hard-hit balls that Green has been giving up recently. It's more hard-hit balls than he's given up all of last year. He gave up a home run today and then a double in the gap, and it just does not look like Chad Green. He's still an effective pitcher, but he's not the unhittable guy that we've seen in the past. And I don't know if it's because the league is just seeing him more or if it's because he's fatigued. I don't know what the answer is, but more innings from your starting pitching is only a good thing.
No doubt, especially late in the season.
So, Chasen Shreve on his way to St. Louis. The Yankees acquired Luke Voit, first baseman, but it's really about the international signing money. They got $1 million from the Cardinals, and they gave them Chasen Shreve and Gallegos. So, Shreve is coming off the 25-man roster. They obviously needed to make a move when they added Happ to the roster, and we talked about how Shreve is the odd man out once they added Britton, and Gallegos is off the 40-man. So what Cashman has done, not only has he acquired Britton and he's acquired Happ, but he's also made the roster less crowded so they have more flexibility in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, this is just, you know, part of the plan that has to happen. I mean, he's got to make some room for guys, and he's got to be able to, you know, have some assets that are lower in the organization that he doesn't have to protect. Because there, you know, the 40-man is going to be an issue over the season. It's going to be interesting what Brian Cashman does to protect guys from the Rule 5 draft. So that's a lot of this is part of it. The international signing pool, they made another deal today for, they sent AA Caleb Frere, the Trenton from the Trenton Thunder. He was on had some time in AAA as well. He had good numbers. I want to say it was under a 1 ERA, left-handed guy. He was definitely keeping left-handed bats at bay in the minor league. So the White Sox obviously liked him for another lefty to come up in their organization, and they got another $1.5 million in signing money for the international pool. So, like, that's obviously what Cashman's doing. He's getting this money to. There was people talking about Ozeal Rodriguez, who's the from Cuba. He's a number 9 in the MLB 30 top prospect list of international players. He's a right-handed pitcher, and he's what, 16 years old. So they're trying to get some of these kids that are super young and controllable, and you know, shave some of the depth at the top of the minor leagues.
Yeah, he might have pulled a Danny Almonte.
Maybe. I mean, that's young, man.
It's young.
How do you think Sanchez and Andujar were signed, though.
Yes. How do you think it is for Caleb Frere getting traded for $1.5 million in signing money? That's like putting a direct dollar amount on your worth.
It's true.
It's like no other players are coming. It's just, we sold you for $1.5 million of international money. See you later, kid.
I mean, I guess that's a kind of a compliment for a guy in Double A.
It's not like $50,000 in international signing money.
Yeah, it's not like an embarrassing amount of money. I mean, I think you could take that home and say, okay, I got sold for $1.5 million. Like, all right.
Yeah.
You know?
And so getting back to Shreve, though, he was very emotional. Did you
hear
him?
Very emotional. I saw it. Yeah, he was
borderline crying. There's no crying in baseball, Chasen.
I'd say there was some moisture coming down the cheek. You know, it was.
I get it.
It was close.
It makes you it humanizes the whole situation, because to hear, like, just think about whenever you are moving or starting a new job or breaking up with somebody. I mean, these life changes still happen. So it kind of humanizes the whole process. He's still a major league athlete. He's still making a lot of money, and he's going to be pitching for the St. Louis Cardinals. That is great. But it's uprooting his current life. So, you know, it makes you take a step back.
It makes you take a step back.
It makes me take a step back and say, wow, Brian Cashman actually traded Chasen Shreve for something.
Well, I mean, you got to look. If you look to see what he has gotten for guys like Chasen Shreve and Chase Headley and Brian Mitchell, it's pretty. And Gallegos, like, he's gotten some pretty decent things in return. Cashman does a lot of he does dumpster diving with the best of them, but you know, he goes out there and he gets the first baseman who, again, is organizational depth in my opinion. Like, he's a right-handed bat. The Yankees probably needed another right-handed first baseman that they could have in the minor leagues. He's He-Man Choi duplicated. Like, they're pretty damn close.
He's
to the
same Tyler point. Austin. I mean, him and Tyler Austin are gonna meet in the clubhouse and just it's the Spider-Man meme.
Tyler Austin, I think, has more pop than Voit, and Voit's not proved it in the major leagues. I mean, I think that's actually giving less credit to Tyler Austin because he has shown power in the major leagues. But this kid hasn't really done much in the majors. I mean, he's hit, I think, some in the minors, but really hasn't done much.
Yeah, I mean, 9 home runs in the minors this year for Voit. Whatever. Yeah. We're spending too much time on a player. We're never
to me,
see
he looks like a generic. He looks like a generic Kyle Schwarber.
Very, very poor man's Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah. Super, super poor.
Tanaka and Sonny Gray are going to go against Baltimore. That lines up the pitching staff for the Red Sox series of Severino, Sabathia, Happ, and Tanaka. And it's already been announced, David Price is going to pitch Sunday night. So it's going to be
Tanaka. We know that doesn't mean anything.
Tanaka again. But why did they announce it 9 days in advance?
That's
only be bad news for David Price.
It's because it's gonna change. I still don't believe he's gonna face the Yankees.
I agree, but
on
it's
Sunday
a
night
week
baseball?
And a half out, we're saying yeah, David Price is pitching Sunday night baseball against the Yankees, the team that just destroyed him, just took him, put him in a box. That is what the Yankees did the last time, last two times they faced him, demoralized him.
What's in the box?
Yeah,
he's terrible, and I would put money on that he doesn't pitch that game.
Okay. Friendly $5 wager?
Done.
I hope he pitches because the Yankees crush him.
I've lost so many bets this year. I'm not on a good streak. I'm due for a win.
Well, good thing gambling's legalized now. You want to give a t-shirt away?
Let's give a t-shirt away. We haven't done that in a while, have we?
No, we have not.
Sometimes we forget to do things. All right, so again, this was for we've been giving away t-shirts for some you guys reviewing us in iTunes. That's the best place to do it. If you listen to us on an iPhone, please go to or any Apple product, but that's where most of the reviews are. So if you can take some time to go in there and give us a 5-star review, give us a something witty, give us some kind of a comment in there, and we'll pick one. Next Sunday, we'll try to do this every Sunday for a t-shirt. But again, this is the best way. If you guys want to support us and help the show out, get us, even higher in iTunes so more people can see it. That is the best way to say hi to us, say thank you. And then this is how we grow as a show. It's like the best way, literally the best way. So this one is the winner for this week. It's NDFB and Yankees fan. That's the name of his. Handle. It says, Scott and Andrew do a great job and always keep me hyped for Yankees baseball. This show is so good that I even look forward to my train ride on Mondays and Thursdays. I would recommend it to anyone. Disclaimer, not intended for friends, family, or associates of Chris Carter, Jacoby Ellsbury, Joe Kelly, Chasen Clippard, David Price, Billy Bean, Chase Headley, Craig Kimbrell, Pickles, Alex Rodriguez, Shohei Ohtani, or the Tampa Bay Devil Rays organization.
Pickles, like pickles in general, or
dill great? Or sweet? Are you a sweet pickle or a dill pickle guy?
Kosher dill.
Oh, I'm 1,000% sweet pickles.
All right. Well, here we go. Yin and yang, buddy. All right. So DM us at Yankees Podcast or on Facebook or wherever, and we will get you your t-shirt. And like Scott said, rate and review the podcast, and you might win a t-shirt down the line. First mailbag question is from Vinny Lula. I'd love to hear your thoughts on Andujar not playing both ends of the doubleheader. He would have been playing three games in 2 days, bookended by 2 days off. The rainout Friday and Monday scheduled. And a week removed from the All-Star break. I know he was a little banged up earlier in the week. Is there a nagging injury involved, or is Boone only obsessed with resting 23-year-olds? And then he says, I'll add that Glaber and Hicks are now sitting in the game we need to win, while Neil Walker, Tyler Wade, and Shane Robinson all start both ends. Are these guys really all fragile, or is Boone overly protective? So yeah. A lot of people were bitching about Boone's lineup decisions. The fact that Wade and Robinson both played both games.
Yeah, no, I didn't like it at all. I didn't like it one bit. The fact that Glaber and who are not able to play both games, I don't get that. I mean, these guys are young dudes that are able to go out there and play these games, these doubleheaders. You can't just treat these doubleheaders like one guy gets a day off every single time. You just can't. With the amount that there are now, you have to treat them like regular games. And when you have very young guys, 23 years old, early 20s, no, you play them. They should play. I didn't like it.
Especially Monday's an off day. Like it's not like you're playing 20 straight days. You have an off day coming up. They can play two games. Gleyber Torres can go out there and play two games at second base. We're not asking him to catch back-to-back games.
Right. Yeah. No, I think it's absolutely him being overly protective or overly cautious for whatever reason. I don't really even know the reason, honestly. Like, it's protecting them from injury. I mean... It's so hard to say that. You know, it's so hard to say what is actually protecting them from injury, because a lot of the time these guys get in better shape when they play more. And that baseball players play so many damn games that they condition themselves to play this many games. So the more that they play, it's sometimes, especially for position players, to me, like the way I look at that, I think it's just, you know, having them get used to it more. It's conditioning their body to play a lot. I mean, that's what they need to be conditioned for. You can't just sit them because it's because it's a doubleheader.
Well, is that a Boone thing or a Cashman thing, or is it a mutual thing?
I'm sure there's a meeting about these types of things and conversations. I don't know who it is. It doesn't seem like it would be a Boone thing, considering you look at what he's the changes we've seen in the bullpen with having guys go two consecutive innings consistently. It doesn't seem like he's trying to shy away from playing guys, but I mean, we saw it. You know, when you don't see Gleyber Torres in there and you don't see Andujar in that second game, in a game that, you know, is damn close to one of those that you just can't lose, it's weird.
I also want to talk about the in the game two of the doubleheader in the eighth inning, when Romine is coming up, or excuse me, when Higgy is coming up in a bunt situation, Boone pinch hits with Romine and then has him bunt. So the bunt worked out. It was a beautiful bunt, so beautiful, in fact, Romine reached base. But why are you using a bench player and a pinch hitter to just sacrifice him? That does not make that, like, managing 101, that's not in the book.
No, but you want to know what is in the book for managing 101 is putting your players in position to succeed. And what I think this is, I think this is a very clear and obvious thing and why he did it. I think that Higgy is not a good bunter and Romine is a good bunter, and he needed that run to, or the runners to move up. So he's going to put the guy in that he has a lot more confidence in doing that, because they need those runners over.
Well, Higgy. Higgy is a career 200 hitter.
He hits home runs. He just hits home runs.
Yeah, he hits home runs.
That's all he does.
Okay.
Romine put down a beautiful.
It was a fantastic,
unbelievably beautiful bunt. If anything, you should be like, Aaron Boone is a friggin' genius.
Oh, come
because
on.
Because he put Romine in there for putting down the most beautiful bunt I've ever seen. He beat it out. Anybody else would have beat it out. Maybe somebody wouldn't have beat it out. But
well, Heart and hustle. Heart and hustle wins that. Romine.
1,000% gets on that base. You get on that base. I mean, he legitimately couldn't have rolled it better. It was beautiful.
It worked out.
I really just think it's a simple matter of one guy is a much better bunter than the other guy, or one guy he knows is a better bunter and he's unsure as of the skills as much of Higgy. He just hasn't done it in a while.
All right, whatever. Let's move on. Next question.
Next question is from Brandon Plunter. He's at B Plunter Plunter. One, should the Yankees still search for another arm before the deadline, focus their search on a bat due to the Judge injury, both of the above, or none of the above?
So have you seen the Yankees are linked to some Chris Archer rumors?
Yes, very loosely, but yes.
Well, the Yankees are loosely linked to every rumor.
Right.
But Archer, apparently the Rays are asking for top dollar for him just because he has been a number one pitcher in the past, and he is signed to a very reasonable contract.
Yeah.
And I guess they just want no starting pitchers on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, why do you need them? They've completely they've shut out starting pitching.
Give us a third inning reliever, and we'll give you Chris Archer.
Chase the Shreve would have been perfect for that.
Oh, that would have been.
But I have a hard time believing they're going to go out and make any other splashy deal unless something just comes to across his Cashman's desk that's too good to pass up. I don't think they're looking for another bat unless it's just like a serviceable guy. You know, it's not going to be a big move. It's not going to be, you know, Andrew McCutchen or anybody like that, like, coming over. I just don't see that happening.
Well, Tuesday is the deadline. So as people are listening to this, tomorrow is the deadline. You never know. Cashman, he could just at 3:59 p.m., the ninja that Cashman is, pull something out of his.
No, there's no doubt. And that would, I think, if something is too good to be passed up for Brian Cashman at the end of towards the deadline, like, he can do work at that point because he has so many assets. So it wouldn't completely shock me. I'm when you look around, you're just not seeing anybody who's obvious. And I don't think they're going to panic at this moment right now and make a move to bring in an outfielder. I don't see that happening unless it's a guy in the minor leagues.
Do you want anything to do with Archer?
I mean, I like Chris Archer. I think he's a good player. I think he, I would. But again, it depends on the cost.
It seems like the cost is very high right now, the asking cost.
Yeah. So yeah, I'd maybe reevaluate that in the offseason. I wouldn't. Again, unless there was no other takers and Brian Cashman saw a deal that was too enticing, I think he's going to pass on that. But
the offseason actually might be a better time, because right now, if you're trading for Chris,
is a better time. Yeah.
If you're trading for Chris Archer now, you are you're essentially trusting the fact that he's going to turn back into the old Chris Archer. But you might have to pay more in the offseason if he proves he's turning back into the old Chris Archer the rest of the season. But at least you know what you're buying.
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, you know, we'll see how much he actually does in the second half too. You know, especially with their with the way that they're. Rotation, is that what they call it? I don't even know. Their staff, with the way that they handle their staff, it's interesting how they do
they're
that.
They're turning baseball on its head. No one knows what to do with the Rays.
Yeah, it's like if you are a manager in Tampa Bay, you have to do something wacky. It's like it's part of your job. At some point, you got to change the way people do things, whether it's shifting or changing the Brian Kenny should be the next manager of the Tampa Bay Rays. That would be entertaining. But no, I wouldn't be surprised if they went and got another depth move as far as like a starter. That wouldn't surprise me either.
Have you ever seen Kevin Cash and Brian Kenny in the same room? Because it's kind of Kenny's ideas, just managing the Rays.
Yeah, I know.
The last mailbag question is from Andrew Owens at Andrew Owens 17 on Twitter. He says, is Hicks a top five center fielder in Major League Baseball? I think so. He's behind only Trout in on-base percentage and slugging, a good defender with a great arm. Do you think he should be leading off every day and have Gardy hit ninth? So the whole top five thing, I that may sound high for Hicks, but when you look at it, he is fourth in WAR for center fielders behind Trout, Kane, Marte. Fourth is pretty damn good. I think we're seeing a down time in center fielders in Major League Baseball. Trout is on another level. We know Trout's on another level than it's the rest of the guys living in Trout's world. I really am more curious about your opinion on the lineup construction and if you have problems with it.
I don't have a problem with it because I love Gardner in the leadoff spot. I think we were both skeptical on having Hicks in the leadoff spot in certain times. We see him when they're facing a lefty most often. And he can go around to the right side, but he's proved that he can do a good job. I mean, yeah, we've seen him more this year than we've had. We this is the sample size that I really wanted to see from Aaron Hicks, and I'm very happy with the player that he seems to be. I think he does go through his streaks. I mean, he just came off of a pretty long down streak, but had a really good day today, and is. Again, we know this. We've said this 1,000 times. He's a plus-plus defender with a ridiculous arm and a ton of range. So I am happy with Aaron Hicks. If he were a 250 hitter that plays great defense and hits, you know, 15 to 20 home runs. Like, I would be happy with that because I don't think this team needs superstar offensive players at every position. Having a tremendous defensive center fielder being strong defensively up the middle is very important. And when you have all these other guys on the team who can hit, then, you know, I think what he gives you is gravy. And he's done a good job in the leadoff spot when he's been there.
Yeah, I guess for the next couple of weeks while Judge is out, you might even be able to play. I know Hicks has been batting him in the middle of the lineup, but you could play with him in the two hole if you want to shift Stanton down, shift Bird down, shift Torres down, or play with move Gleyber Torres up to the two hole, because I think Gleyber Torres is like projection is the prototypical number two hitter.
I would love to see them move. I think this is a great opportunity for Boone to move Gleyber Torres to that two spot. It really is. And honestly, if he were to succeed there when Judge would come back, I would not have a problem with them leaving him there and moving everybody down a spot. Because if you have a guy like Gleyber Torres who's, you know, doing well in the two spot, you're just going to have more ducks on the pond for those big boys. And I love that. So, you know, and the way that Bird is lining up and the way that he's hitting, you know, theoretically, if everybody's healthy at this point, if you have Gleyber Torres in the two spot, you have Judge in the three spot, then you have Bird between him and Stanton, or stack Stanton. And, you know, a lot of people don't care about the lefty-righty matchup. Either way, I think they're fine. You know, 3, 4, 5, having those three guys there, and then Didi or Sanchez when healthy, it's so deep at that point. So I think Gleyber Torres in that two spot would make a lot of sense, especially now with Judge injured.
Yeah, I agree. All right, that'll do it for mailbag questions. If you guys want to submit questions for next Monday's show, do so at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. You can tweet us at Yankees Podcast and submit them in the Facebook group. Just search the Bronx Pinstripe Show on Facebook. We have voicemails coming up. This is going to be a fun batch of voicemails because we have the Gary Sanchez stuff, we have the Britton trade, and we have the Hap trade. So going to be a busy voicemail segment.
It's the best when the voicemail segment is completely bipolar. And we do this, we do it on Sundays, and we keep them all throughout the week so that everybody, you know, we can kind of feel the tone of the week out. And I think it works out the best, especially when there's infuriating things happen and great things that happen.
All right, we'll talk to you guys on Thursday before that big Red Sox series.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
Trade Gary Sanchez. Get a pitcher. Romine should be the full-time catcher. He has a hustle that Gary Sanchez doesn't have. There's no reason for a guy like that to be playing baseball on a team that needs to win a championship this year. I'm done. That's it. Anyone who thinks that run in the first inning was Andujar's fault is a fucking idiot. I've been calling for Romine. You said Romine since the beginning. No hustle. No heart. No effort. He's a lazy, fat sack of shit.
Just a pathetic loss again at the House of Horrors in Tampa. Gary Sanchez can't be batting below the Mendoza line with his terrible walking abilities and then not hustling, costing the Yankees a game. The bullpen, where is Tommy Canley? Somebody get that guy out of the minor leagues and send Gary for him. I just can't be more frustrated.
Dude, Gary, we need you to run. I'm tired of this Baloo the Bear bumbling down the line bullshit. Get your head out of your ass and run. Aaron Boone lost that game, period. Why the fuck is Didi Bunning with Giancarlo on deck? Of course you're gonna walk him. I wonder what Steph fucking told him to do that. Fucking ridiculous.
What is the opposite of release? Imprison? Imprison the Kraken.
Explain to me, after this performance, after this game, why Gary Sanchez has a starting position on this club. Give me one good reason, okay? He can't field his position, he won't bust it out of the box, and he can't hit for shit. Trade him for a top-end of the rotation starter, along with a prospect or two, and use Romine. Worry about catcher in the offseason. I know a lot of guys that can hit 188 and not bust it out of the box. Wow. What a dismal, piss-poor performance that was. I've been backing up Gary Sanchez for the past entire season, really, saying, oh, his batting average, you know, we've been hitting the hard luck. That tonight was horrible, period. Yeah, you drove in that one run. You also did up a run scoring a pass ball by not out-hustling the ball that was rolling down the line. And then, with an out to go, you hit a ground ball up the middle, Hicks beats it out to Tampa Force, and you can't make it to first base. What are you doing?
Guys, I don't know if I've ever seen a more obvious laziness on a professional sports field than what Gary Sanchez just did tonight. How the hell do you jog to a pass ball, and how the fuck do you possibly jog it down the line on the last play of the game? The guy is hitting 180, and he's going to dog it around the field. Are you kidding me? I need Boone and Judge to go old school on his ass. I don't want to hear about any closed-door meetings. I better hear about them chewing his ass out in front of the rest of the team, in the media. There's zero excuse for that pathetic effort.
This is Jalen from New Orleans, and I am so sick and tired of losing to the goddamn Tampa Bay Devil Rays. Are you kidding me? In their shitty dome, with their shitty fans, in the shittiest state in America, Florida. And we go down there, and we got a catcher that thinks, oh, we're in Florida, I'll just take it easy. Going away, can't come back with the signs right. Jogging down the line, one of my favorite players. It's so disappointing to see that coming from someone wearing pinstripes. Fuck the Devil Rays. God damn.
Hey guys, Brian calling here from Arizona after watching that abomination of a final out. Gary Sanchez, what can be said about this guy? Fucking 180. Cannot stop a baseball behind home plate. Just the fundamentals are not there. The hustle is not there. And then to pull that shit with two outs when you're already behind the Sox, five games, now six, a chance to go ahead, tie, win the ball game, and you're stumbling out of the box. You basically come to a full stop halfway down the first baseline. Absolute fucking joke. Guys, I'm at a loss for words.
For Gary Sanchez not to run out that ball from home plate when we are literally down five games from first, you cannot do that. You cannot. It's like pulling in Rush Hour on the metro trying to get somewhere at 5 o'clock. You gotta hustle. No matter what. Governor Jack, he is one of Yankees. He's homegrown, all that, everything. But, man, he's gotta wake up. We gotta make a run. Let's get it. Come on, let's go, Yankees.
Boys, it's Michael in Nashville, and I just don't know what to think about Gary Sanchez right now. The lack of hustle is a major problem. I understand that you're going to struggle at the plate. I understand that you're going to make mistakes, but there is no excuse for a lack of hustle. And I can guarantee you that last run out to first base would have never happened with the boss alive because he would have chewed his ass out at the end of the first inning. There was no way in God's earth he would not have run to the first base had the boss been alive because the boss would have absolutely murdered that boy.
First off, Andrew and Scott, I love the show. I'm always listening to the podcast. It's great. It keeps my day going, especially after a loss of life last night. But with Gary's display of just piss poor athleticism, and now he's just being placed on the DL. I just got an update on my phone that they did an MRI after last night's game, and it's interesting. But all I have to say is I don't know what the fuck they're going to do because Boston just keeps winning. And I don't want them in a fucking wild card game against Seattle, in Seattle, or against Oakland, because I feel like Oakland could get them.
said, fuck you. Is that going to be the same Russ riding his fucking dick when he starts hitting homers again, right? Fuck out of here. Yankee fans, back off your players. All you fucking dudes that were booing Stanton, you're the same ones talking shit about Sanchez. Fuck you. Let's go Yankees. Yeah, bro.
They're going to lose these guys in the Rule 5 draft anyway, so it's worth it. You can't keep them all. It kind of sucks to give them to a division rival, but Britton should be good.
Hey, I saw your tweet to talk about the Zach Britton trade. I just wanted to tell you what I thought. If you want to give me a call back, you can. My number is 203-231-8282. If not, just think it was a good trade with the bullpen that we have now. It's going to be crazy and gives us a little more room to work with some of the guys who aren't pitching too well and maybe send them down or get rid of them. But with Zach Britton, we can have a great bullpen for relieving starting pitchers, and I think it's a good trade. Thank you. Bye.
I don't freaking understand how Sanchez can play such a lazy-ass fucking game like that and basically cost the Yankees a game against the Tampa Bay fucking Devil Rays. It's ridiculous. This isn't the pros. This isn't freaking beer leagues. You hustle your ass off and you work your fucking ass off. Like, I mean, it's fucking ridiculous. He's a fucking professional. He should be busting it every freaking play, no matter what. No matter if we're winning or if we're getting beat like 10 freaking nothing.
Yeah, baby. J.A., however the hell you say his fucking name. But either way, Cashman pulled a pretty decent pickup. Well, after getting Britton, with the way the bullpen's set up right now, I think we probably might even need the guy just to go 6 innings, because that four-headed freaking beast in the late innings.
Sevy, what the hell, man? 6-0 to the freaking Kansas City Royals? Are you kidding me? How the hell are you going to pitch in a wild card game that, you know, the division's fucking out of the question? Gosh, this team needs to pick it up. And Sevy, you need to figure your shit out or else you're going to the DL, man. And if that happens, you're fucked. So, go Yankees.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.